Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out. Indecision. Overthinking. Second-guessing every choice you make. In. Plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out. Beige on beige on beige. Ugh. In. Knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Do you know about the true crimes that inspired a Bruce Springsteen album? Or the murders AC/DC was blamed for? How about Taylor Swift's violent stalkers? Or the suspicious deaths of Brittany Murphy and River Phoenix? These stories and more are told in the Disgraceland podcast, hosted by me, Jake Brennan, every Tuesday, where I dive deep into subjects from the dark side of music history and entertainment. So follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Nobody in Kansas City has sports like 96.5 The Fan.
Right side throw, touchdown! Kansas City! A 3-yard touchdown pass in overtime! Kansas City wins the game!
Welcome into The Drive with Carrington Harrison.
Back-to-back best sports talk host as voted on in the Pitch magazine.
Live from the Fan Studio.
Let's do this. Another day, another dollar, another edition of The Drive. You are listening to The Drive on 96.5 The Fan, 96.5thefan.com, and also the Odyssey app. My name is Carrington Harrison. Excited to be here with you on this wonderful, wonderful Thursday. We have so much to get into in today's show. Rob is off today. Rob and his lovely wife had decided to take a couple of days. They have gone on a nice little trip. This is like a bonus honeymoon. You know, you got to do this sometimes to keep the marriage strong. You got to just take a trip or two. You know, Rob didn't plan on his team making it to the final weekend of the college basketball season. So very convenient that he planned a trip around Final Four time, but it is perfectly fine. I am here. I also did not plan for my team to be in the Final Four. I always planned on being here with you guys. So I am here. JT Noah is here. We're going to take you up until 6 o'clock. We do have a full show today as the Royals have an off day. We will talk some Royals baseball. We will have a little bit of a reset as we are 1 week officially into the Royals baseball season. Before we get into the opening monologue in today's show, I want to ask you guys to do me a couple of things. Number one, I need you listening to The Drive each day at 2 o'clock right here on 96.5 The Fan. And number two, I need you to tell one friend. I mean, it'd be cool. I'd appreciate it if you tell two friends. But you know what? If you only told one friend about the show this week, you know what? I would greatly appreciate if you did that. This is where I would like to start. Sometimes in the midst of discussing all of the things about sports, I think we forget to sometimes sit down and smell the roses and think about why you chose for this to be one of your hobbies. We spend so much time talking about salary cap and should you cut this player or trade this player if this player is living up to expectations or not meeting expectations. We talk about payroll and we talk about a lot of other things other than what we are watching. We talk about how this player would match up in this era and could this guy play. In the end, none of that matters and it's just noise. Now, it's fun. You don't choose to get into the business that I chose to get into if you don't enjoy those conversations. But you want to know why I got into sports? You want to know why you also got into sports? Because they're fun and you get a chance to see people do really incredible athletic feats at the absolute highest level. More than anything we talk about, you know what I love? I love the competition. I love the athleticism, the drama at the absolute highest level. I love seeing people do incredible athletic feats. Can we just take a step back to acknowledge what we've seen this week in sports? A couple of nights ago, Nikola Jokic, who in my opinion is the best basketball player in the world, he played 53 minutes of an NBA game. He scored 61 points on 18 of 29 shooting. He was 6 of 11 from 3. He had 10 rebounds, 10 assists, a handful of steals. This is quite literally one of the greatest basketball games that we have ever seen an individual play. That is not hyperbole. If you play 50 minutes and you score 60 points and you do it on 60% shooting and you shoot over 50% from three and you get 10 rebounds and 10 assists, it is one of the greatest basketball games that any person has ever put together. That happened this week in sports. How about Steph Curry? A player that we have seen since it feels like he was a baby. You probably remember the first time you saw Stephen Curry. It was in March Madness. It was in the NCAA tournament. It was this kid that none of us had ever heard of before. Hey, who's this skinny kid on Davidson? Hey, he can shoot it a little bit. And March Madness created a star. The Davidson Wildcats went on to beat the Gonzaga Bulldogs, a team that was also emerging at this point. And they were down 17 in that game. A star was created. That was back in 2008. That same player, now 17 years later, has become the greatest shooter in the history of shooting basketballs. I say this all the time. Everybody has shot a basketball before. Maybe you didn't do it at a high level. Maybe one day you were just outside messing around in the driveway and you picked up the ball and you shot it and you airballed. And you said, oh, not for me. Some of you got really good at shooting a basketball. You were all district, all conference, all state. You got a scholarship somewhere. Everybody has shot a basketball at some point. This man is so good at shooting a basketball, we all acknowledge you are the best at it. You know how good you got to be at it for everybody to acknowledge? Hey, we'll even argue it anymore. I'm not arguing Ray Allen. I'm not arguing Larry Bird. You got it. You are the greatest person that has ever done this. Just this week, Steph Curry, at almost 40 years old, because he's creeping up there. He's 37 years old. He getting old. He played 37 minutes. He was 16 of 31 from the floor. He was 12 of 20 from three. He shot 60% from three in an NBA game and had 52 points, 10 rebounds, and 8 assists at 37 years old. He is amazing. I just want us, in the midst of all the arguing that we do about sports and all the hot takes and all the trolls and all of those things, can we just sit back and acknowledge that we live in an incredible time to watch sports? Nikola Jokic is one of the greatest basketball players to ever live. Stephen Curry is the greatest basketball player, the greatest person to ever pick up and shoot a basketball. He is literally the greatest shooter that we have ever seen before. That's not where it stopped this week. Shohei Ohtani is in the middle of doing things that we have never seen before. When your historical comparison is Babe Ruth, you have done something very, very well. Just think about it. On his bobblehead night, you saw the lines there. You would have thought that One Direction was doing a reunion concert there. You would have thought that NSYNC had gotten back together. Everybody in the LA area was at Dodger Stadium to pick up a bobblehead doll. They pick one up. And they're watching the baseball game, and I've been to Dodger Stadium. It's nice. Very beautiful. In a tie baseball game, the person who they are there to see with the bobblehead comes up. On the first pitch, he hits a home run to hit a walk-off home run on his bobblehead. You can't make this stuff up. That's why we watch sports. We watch sports for the competition. We watch sports for the greatness. And this week, we have got to see undeniable greatness between Steph Curry, between Nikola Jokic, between Shohei Ohtani. We also live in an era where you get to see one of the three greatest basketball players of all time on a nightly basis do it in his 40s. I don't care if you think Jordan's better than LeBron. I honestly don't care. You can have him one, two, I don't care. He is undeniably one of the three greatest basketball players of all time. He still plays. In fact, you can check him out later today if you would like to. He's playing. We live during a time where you can say that maybe the most talented quarterback to ever play football currently plays. You get the opportunity to watch that player 20 times a season play and do so at the absolute highest level. I don't know what it is about my era and my generation, but we're really hesitant to say that we are in the middle of greatness. And maybe it's because we don't want to be considered and called prisoner of the moment, so we always got to, like, tip our cap to things were always better in the 90s. I don't know, man. I'm seeing basketball played at the absolute highest level. I'm seeing baseball played at an incredibly high level. I'm seeing football played at an incredibly high level. And the athletes that we get a chance to watch on a day-in, day-out basis have shown me that they can compete in any era, in any generation. I don't care what you think about basketball in the 90s. They wasn't stopping 6'8", 225, barreling down the lane. They weren't. I don't care how tough and physical you think basketball was. They were not stopping Steph Curry from just shooting over you. I've seen him do it against other countries. I've seen him do it. He was certainly doing it against the Atlanta Hawks in 1994. There is no era of baseball in which Shohei would not be incredible. There's no era of football in which Patrick Mahomes would not be the most dominant player of that time. That is the time period that we currently live in right now. So I love the arguing. I really do. I don't want anyone to think that I don't love the arguing and talking about the salary cap. And we should trade this guy and this guy's a bum. He should be fired. That's all fun. But sometimes we just got to sit back and we got to smell the roses. And this week, if you are a sports fan, you got to see Nikola Jokic go for 60. You got to see Steph Curry go for 50 and 10 and shoot 12 of 20. He hit 12 threes in an NBA game. You got a chance to see Shohei Ohtani on his bobblehead night hit a walk-off home run to win a game. You got to see Patrick Mahomes take a team to a third straight Super Bowl this year. And LeBron James, he's played with his kid in the NBA. LeBron James has been along that we remember him watching him as a junior in high school with throwbacks and Hummers and all of these things. Now playing with this kid in the NBA, we live in an incredible time to be a sports fan. Coming up on the other side, let's talk a little bit about the Final Four. We have two games coming up this weekend in college basketball. We have an SEC tilt between Florida and Auburn, and we also have Houston going up against Duke. We'll also be joined by Nick Schwert. You guys remember him, used to produce the Midday Show. He now does fantastic work for Bleacher Report. He also has a podcast called Could Be Wrong that covers the Kansas Jayhawks. Kansas, they currently do not have a player that played a minute for their team last year back for this upcoming season. They are completely starting over. They have one of the most talented high school prospects in Darren Peterson. They've got Bryson Tiller, a high four-star big, and they are completely starting from scratch for the Kansas Jayhawks this year. We will talk to Nick Schwert about it next. Keep it right here, Sidrive. Coming up in just a little bit, we'll catch up with Nick Schwert. He covers the Kansas Jayhawks. He does fantastic work for Bleacher Report. He also is the host of the Could Be Wrong podcast with Mike Verdin. As of now, after the transfer from AJ Store, KU does not have a player currently on their roster that played in this past college basketball season. They have completely started from scratch. They have maybe the second best high school basketball recruit who is joining. They also have Bryson Tiller, who's a top 15 prospect in high school basketball. And that is it for next season. They are going to have to build an entire roster from scratch and do so on the fly. We'll be joined by Nick Schwert here coming up in a bit. We'll get his thoughts on the Jayhawks in what feels like a transition year for one of the top programs in college basketball. Let's keep the college basketball theme going and let's talk about the Final Four. Now, I've been doing my weekly rounds for my podcast. You know, I love a couple, handful of podcasts. I try to stay up to date on them. I like to know what the national conversation is. And I've noticed the theme in some of these podcasts. Was this NCAA tournament boring? Is this a boring Final Four? I'm a little bit confused. Don't we want to see the top players and the top teams go up against each other and play in the absolute biggest stage? Because I'm not really sure how you can be a fan of college basketball, a fan of competition at the absolute highest level, and then feel like you got cheated in any way. Did you know that still left in this NCAA tournament, the best offensive team, the second best offensive team, and the third best offensive team are all still alive in the NCAA tournament? And Houston, who is not in that top three, oh yeah, they're 10th. It's not like we're talking about Houston's 92nd offensively. They were one of the 10 best offensive teams in college basketball this year. We're talking about four teams that are battle-tested at this point. Duke went 19-1 in the ACC and haven't been challenged at any point in this NCAA tournament. Houston, coming from the Big 12, they've been tested. They played Auburn in the non-con. They went up against Kansas and Texas Tech and Arizona and all of these really good schools and are 34-4. Florida, Auburn, we don't have to talk about the competition in the SEC. There were 14 teams from that league that made the NCAA tournament. Every night you were playing a good team, whether you were playing a Tennessee, whether you were playing a Missouri, a Mississippi State. If you were even playing a team like Oklahoma that ended up being a 9 seed in the NCAA tournament for 2 months, if you were Florida or Auburn, you have been battle tested. So we got great players, great coaches, historic franchises, legendary franchises playing in the Final Four back-to-back games Saturday night. And then if you look at the defensive side, maybe you're one of those people. Defense wins championships. All right, well, Duke was ranked 1st offensively and 5th on defense. Houston, they were ranked 10th on offense. They're the number one defense. Wait, you're telling me you're a fan of basketball? You got Duke, who is number one in offense, going up against Houston, who is number one on defense. They are playing each other for a chance to go to the national championship. And we're having a conversation about, has the tournament been boring or not? The tournament's been boring because a school that you had never heard of, with a coach you never heard of, and players you had never heard of, they didn't make it past the first weekend of the NCAA tournament. That's what's bored you? And not the fact that we got Tom Izzo in a Elite Eight. Not the fact that Duke is back in the Final Four. Not the fact that that's been boring. But we're mad because Colorado State lost in the second round of the tournament. It's confusing to me. Then you go at Florida and Auburn. Auburn's 8th defensively. Florida's 10th defensively. You got four teams. Both teams are in the top four in offense and defense this year. And we're having conversations on whether or not that this tournament has been boring. This is silly to me. I think this tournament has been a basketball fan's dreams if you really want to see the best. Now, if you're interested in your bracket being destroyed, if you're interested in the surprise of college basketball, yes, this has not provided a whole lot of surprises. There has not been a lot of turns. But I would say that we love predictable. You love superhero movies. You don't think Spider-Man's going to die at the end of the movie, do you? No, I assure you, he's going to get the girl, he's going to live, and they're going to make another Spider-Man movie at the end of it. Funny how that works. I would say that we love predictable. That's what this tournament was. The heroes kept winning and kept advancing, and regardless of what national championship we get, it will be a great game. Doesn't matter if it's Duke and Auburn. Doesn't matter if it's Houston against... Does not matter. We have set ourselves up. And I would say we were set up probably in the Elite Eight that it does not matter who the national championship game is. We are positioned to see the best teams in college basketball go up against each other. I'm cool with that. I don't have much of a problem with the way that this NCAA tournament has gone. In fact, this is kind of how I like my tournament to be. I want to see the best players, the best coaches. Sure, I wish there had been a story that emerged in this NCAA tournament. You always want to see that 11 seed make a little bit of a run, but not when we get to money time. No, now it's about the best. It's about who's going to cut down the nets. It's about the road to the Final Four. I'm happy with the four teams that we got. These have been four of the top, let's say, six teams in college basketball from start to finish, and we got four of those teams playing each other Saturday night in San Antonio. I'm not mad at that.
I'm totally fine with the Final Four. I was also fine with the Elite Eight because eight of the top nine teams in KenPom were in there. The only one that missed was Gonzaga. In newsflash, they had to play Houston in the second round. I like close games. I think they're more compelling and bring the audience. I get it. You don't get your girlfriend or your wife to sit down to watch the games because there's no Cinderella. But remember a couple years ago, you had a big blowout because you had some small schools get into the Elite Eight Final Four. You don't want that when it gets to the Final Four. You want to see the best of the best, and I think the top four teams left are the best of the best and got hot at the right time.
Text line 913-586-7965. CDOT, this tournament has been boring if you like March Madness, but it's been great if you like college basketball. I think that's a fair way to put it. If you are watching the tournament for, I would call them the human interest stories and the underdogs, I don't think this tournament has it. And I do think as college basketball has become less about name brands, you don't know the players as well as you did 15 years ago. You don't know the coaches as much. But one thing has always been consistent in the tournament. It's for 3 weeks, you gravitate towards Oakland, that advantage. You gravitate towards a St. Peter's. You gravitate towards these schools that you had never heard of, and that's an easy story for you to get behind. No. This NCAA tournament has been for the diehards. This has been for the people that were watching college basketball in November, the people that were watching college basketball in December, and pretty clearly identified early on in this thing who the best teams in the sport were. There wasn't a whole lot of surprises in this year's NCAA tournament. It's been clear in the SEC who the elite teams are. We knew who the good teams were, but I'm talking about the elite teams. That's been Tennessee. That's been Alabama. That's been Florida. That's been Auburn. Those are the teams that kept advancing in the NCAA tournament. We've known Duke has been good. Duke has lost two games in 2025. They advanced to the Final Four. Houston has been pretty clearly one of the top 10 teams in college basketball from start to finish. So I'm with you. If you love college basketball and you want to see the best coaches, best players, this tournament has provided you that. It just hasn't provided many surprises. It hasn't provided many left turns. It's been pretty straightforward. These two good teams are going to play each other, and the clear, obvious best team is going to win. This has been the most predictable NCAA tournament that I can remember. I guess maybe since 2008, which also had 4-1 seeds that advanced. But it was pretty clear who the teams were that were the best, and those teams have advanced in this year's NCAA tournament. Let's head to the phone lines right now to be joined by Nick Schwert. He covers the Kansas Jayhawks for Bleacher Report. He also covers them for the Could Be Wrong podcast with Mike Vernon. Nick, happy to have you join us on the show today, man. Thanks a lot for popping on today. Let's start with this. I'm wondering if you think this is a good or a bad thing that has happened with KU. Because the good thing is this is a team that you did not love this upcoming or this past season that is now moving on. But now it could be a bad thing that KU has to almost completely start from scratch. Where do you land on this? Is this a good thing or a bad thing for the Jayhawks?
Throughout this season, all I said every single time they would lose a game, whether it was to Mizzou or to Creighton or to West Virginia or both those games in that Utah trip, every single game, same reaction. This is not it. This team doesn't have dogs. They don't have guys. They're not going to go on a March run. They need to reset the roster this offseason. But that can mean a lot of different things. Like resetting to me is, okay, you're losing three or four seniors. You go out and bring in Darren Peterson, some other talented freshmen. You supplement them with some transfer portal guys, maybe actually try hitting on some portal guys this time. And then you'll come into next season with a fresh vibe. But this is not what I had in mind. Starting over effectively with 12 new guys next year, I don't think any coach wants to do that. But when you look at Bill Self's time at Kansas, this is not his strength. He's a Hall of Fame coach, one of the greatest in college basketball history. But he's never done great with massive roster turnover because what he's done so well is build cultures. Get guys in for 2-3 years. They turn into program guys. They can be kind of your leaders on the court. Some of the worst teams that he's had at KU, whether you look back at the Andrew Wiggins and Bede year, 2019 when Devon Dodson and David McCormick were freshmen, a lot of the teams where you had brand new rotations, brand new rosters have been his worst teams. And next year, this is going to be the biggest overhaul he's ever had at Kansas. I don't care if Darren Peterson is the next Donovan Mitchell. Like, he's not going to be good enough to make up for the fact that he's never played with the other four guys on the court, same thing with everybody else. So I don't know, man. I guess I'm talking out of both sides of my mouth, but ultimately I just don't love the idea of starting with 12 new players next year.
Are you worried about Self and how he's going to handle this transfer portal? I ask that question because it's not like they don't have the ability to hit in the portal. You're Kansas. You're going to have the NIL money. You've got the backing. You've got the dollars. We're not talking about a lack of resources here. It is finding the right pieces to fit that go with a very talented freshman point guard. Do you trust Bill to manage the resources to build this roster to where it needs to be?
I'd be lying if I said I wasn't a little concerned based off how the last two transfer portal cycles have went. I mean, we thought this was aces last year. A.J. Storr coming in, 17 points a game at Wisconsin. Ryland Griffin, a starter on a Final Four Alabama team. Zeke Mayo, player of the year in his conference. You thought you'd addressed every need you had. You went out, you got shooting, you got scoring, you got floor spacing. Where was it? Those guys were not the dudes you thought you got in the portal. And we can chalk it up to a bad offseason. We can chalk it up to poor evaluation. Hey, everybody's due for a down year. Get them next time. But the game's different, man. The game is different. These players want different things. They have to be coached different ways. I'll say this. The thing, and maybe you were going to get to this, so sorry for jumping ahead, that is troubling to me is Flory Badunga. You had an All-American big man who played, what, 16 minutes a game? It's not like he was riding the bench. Sure, he wanted to play more. Lots of freshmen do. He was due for a massive role next year. So everything that you talked about with resources and NIL money, like KU had that, but they couldn't hold on to this guy they already had. That is more troubling than any portal guy you miss on or anybody you go out and get this summer, is you had a dude in-house. He was already here, and for, I'm sure, a variety of reasons, he decided he didn't want to stick around here. That, to me, is a bit of a red flag in terms of what's going on with this program, what's going on with this coaching staff, and what are we missing that's making guys not want to be in Lawrence right now?
That's the thing that's so surprising to me is I've heard a lot of KU fans say what you just said. Bill's best teams have been 3-4 year guys that know Lawrence, know the system, know the program, and grow together. That's what I thought that Flory was. You were a freshman big that was McDonald's All-American. You're coming back to play college basketball. Year two, year three, you turn into a lottery pick and you go off to the NBA. We've seen that formula work so much. The reason I would have cause for concern as a KU fan is now you can't keep those guys for 3-4 years. You've always been able to keep those players.
Well, yeah, and then I think the point that other people would bring up would be, well, let's say KU's offering him, I'm just throwing random numbers, I have no idea what he was getting paid or what they wanted to pay him next year, but let's just say a nice round number, $1 million. Even if KU is the cream of the crop, blue blood, they have all these resources, they have all this money, in this new world, there's always, doesn't matter how good of a program, but there's always someone else that'll be willing to pay you more. There's always someone else that'll pay you $100,000 more, $200,000 more, $500,000 more. And KU and every program isn't going to be able to get to a point where they're just going to always offer the most money. We are going to outbid everybody because there are limitations to what you're going to want to pay guys. The problem is that KU has built-in advantages that those other schools don't, like where money shouldn't play a factor. You would hope that KU was ahead of the game to say, okay, in this NIL world, it's not just going to be about dollars and cents. It's going to be about other incentives that we can offer you in terms of getting you in front of potential NIL deals, right? Like all of these, I don't know what those things are, but you would think over the past 5 years that these programs and athletic departments would have been coming up with a strategy on how to win in this new era without just having to have the biggest bag of cash. So I don't know where those shortcomings are, but you're right. Like Flory should have been one of those guys. And now he's deciding like, no, I'll go and play somewhere else. You didn't have enough of those other things, the culture stuff, to say like, hey, I'll turn down $200,000 to be a part of this at Kansas, because that's how it used to be. And it's very clearly not the world we're living in anymore.
Right now, we're talking to Nick Schwert, who covers the Jayhawks, the Could Be Wrong podcast with Mike Vernon. I asked this question earlier in the week to Rob. I'll ask it to you. Can you think of a whole lot of high major teams that their roster was built around a freshman point guard? That you sure, we can find a couple examples. Trae Young at Oklahoma, John Wall, some of those John Calipari teams. there's not many basketball teams that I can say that the core, the foundation of their team was a freshman point guard like Kansas is going to be next season.
I can go all the way back to Derrick Rose in 2008. I don't know how much that helps the argument, but yeah, it doesn't help. And I think a lot of times when you get to March and you're looking at the teams who, oh, I believe in Ben, that's a team I don't want to face. It's the team with the senior point guard. It's the Mark Sears of Alabama to say, like, yeah, he's been around, he's seen it all, he knows everything, he's like a coach on the floor. No, you haven't really seen it. And I assume you're referencing Darren Peterson. I think the thing with Bill Self that I have confidence in is for all the big men, the Clip Alexanders, the Sheck Diallos, the Floyd Badungas, the big men that came in as freshmen and didn't play as much as KU fans wanted to, the one position, and even the wings too, like Andrew Wiggins, Kelly Oubre, we can get into that, but like the one position where Bill has had the easiest time just sort of handing the keys over to and say, go do your thing, has been point guards. Whether it was Devon Dotson, I know Frank was technically a sophomore by the time he started, but going back to even like Mario Chalmers, Sharon Collins, like he loves having that dynamic point guard, and Darren Peterson may be like the most talented guard he's ever had. I don't know how that's going to translate to wins on the court, but I mean, if he's really the future number one overall pick in the NBA draft, that's a, whether it results in a championship or not, like that is the type of talent you just say yes to and figure it out later.
That is our guy, Nick Schwert, joining us on the show today. He covers the Kansas Jayhawks. He does fantastic work with Bleacher Report, also the Could Have Been Wrong podcast with Mike Vernon, who is a must-follow if you are a Jayhawk fan. He is the number one reporter covering the Kansas Jayhawks, so shout out to Mike Vernon. I think this is a very, very interesting time for Kansas basketball. Now, I know that KU fans have the belief that we don't rebuild, we just retool, and KU has been on top of the mountain for as long as I can remember. They finished tied for fifth in the Big 12 two seasons ago. They finished sixth in the Big 12 this past season. They are 21-17 in their last 2 years in the Big 12. Now, on the positive side, you might be arguing, well, it's a bunch of players that we didn't want back anyway. I want to start fresh. We didn't want to bring back everybody from last year. So maybe you guys don't know this part about scholarships, but scholarships are simply one-year contracts. They bind the player and the school for 1 year. So at the end of it, they have an evaluation like a lot of people have at their job. And some of these kids at all schools, not just at KU, are simply deciding, well, hey, I'm going to go chase the bag. I don't want to be here anymore. That's some kids. Some kids are being flat out told by their school, hey, we don't have a scholarship for you. Or, you know, as a player, they're about to recruit over you. So, yeah, you can come back if you want to. You ain't going to play on next year's team. So now you got a choice about what you want to do. So I think it's a combination of both of these things. I think some of these kids leaving KU are simply chasing the bag and trying to go get more money. And I ain't mad at you. I think in some of these instances, KU's looking at their chance. We got a chance to completely clean the board from what we did last year. Let's start over. We know the NIL money is going to be there. Adidas, all the sponsors that they have, the boosters, the NIL collective. There's no question that Kansas has the resources to go field a really, really good team. What I find really interesting about this is it is the conversations that we've had about KU and the reality of what this year's team is going to be. I agree with most Kansas fans. The best KU teams have been the teams that Bill has been able to shape and mold over a 3-4 year stretch. You recruited this kid. He went through his ups and downs. You got frustrated with him. You loved him. But by the time he was a junior or a senior, the light came on. And that kid was ready to be an All-American. Once he had a great junior year, he was ready to go on to the NBA. That is not what this year's KU basketball team is going to be. And they are building their team in a way that is just very, very unique. Not many teams in today's college basketball have a top five future pick point guard. It's different than Duke. Cooper Flagg is 6'10". We're talking about a 6'2 point guard that you were building around. And you have no other pieces to put with them. Now comes the really hard work. You got to roll up your sleeves and you got to build a team from scratch that A, you think fits his skill set, and one that you also think you can coach in a very short period of time and make it work. I think heading into this offseason, I think Kansas is one of the most intriguing teams in the entire sport of college basketball. I don't think it's just a local thing. This is different than when you've had three or four guys that leave as seniors, but you had sophomores and juniors who are now ready to step up and ready to fill more minutes. Almost every minute is available from last year. Everyone, this is starting a team from scratch. They are one of the more interesting case studies of a basketball team. And can Bill do it? Can Bill do it this year? I know some Kansas fans might not want to have that conversation. That is a question. The 23 and 24 Kansas Jayhawks teams were built off the strength of the portal. We got Hunter Dickinson. We got AJ Storr. It did not work. It has to work this time if you are Kansas. This is your vision, your creation. This is you sitting down with your staff, you sitting down with your NIL people, and you figuring out a budget that you have to go field the best basketball team possible to get back to the standard that we have created here in Kansas. We don't finish sixth in the Big 12. We don't lose three home games. That is not what Kansas basketball is. Can KU get back to what they've been, which is dominant, which is one of the best basketball, if not the best college basketball program in the country? Coming up on the other side, we'll talk about the Kansas City Chiefs, who have a very, very common theme this offseason. That's coming up. Keep it right here. It's The Drive. Welcome back into The Drive. Coming up at the top of the hour, we'll be joined by Jacob Milham. We'll talk a little Royals baseball as the Royals have an off day. This is a good time to kind of woo-saw and reset and learn where we are with the Kansas City Royals. We'll do that coming up in about 15 minutes or so. Let's talk about some breaking news in the National Football League. Geno Smith has signed an extension with the Las Vegas Raiders. You guys remember he was on Seattle's team. He has now since been traded to the Las Vegas Raiders. He is now reunited with Pete Carroll. It is a two-year, $75 million extension that includes $66.5 million in guaranteed money. Now, I know how some of you hear this. I can't believe you would pay that much for Geno Smith. I'm not going to lie to you. It's a lot of money for Geno Smith. But I think what is important to note, we talk a lot about how much money the NFL is making. The players get some of that money, too. And the players who get a majority of it are the quarterbacks. And I would say now, what I think we have done, and it took a while, but we have established what the hierarchy is at quarterback and what guys can expect to get paid. Now, this is where the conversation about Brock Purdy comes in, and where do you slot him? Because we know what an elite quarterback costs. We've got the numbers. I could tell you what Joe Burrow costs, what Lamar Jackson costs, what Josh Allen costs, what Patrick Mahomes costs. This is how much you need to be making every single year. I also can tell you what Geno is making and what Sam Darnold is making, what Baker Mayfield is making. We have established what the tiers are in the National Football League. Now we got to slot Brock Purdy. Because I think in theory, Brock Purdy is closer to Baker Mayfield than he is Josh Allen. He's also taken his team to a Super Bowl. He's also proven that, hey, when I'm healthy and I've got the guys and pieces around me, we can go to NFC championship games and can compete for Super Bowls. Now, will that continue to be the case in San Francisco? We'll see how this season. They have kind of hit a soft reset on what they're doing. They still got a lot of pieces and parts, but they've had to start to chip away at some of the talent that they've stockpiled because now the bill is due on their quarterback. They've been getting over. They had a 7th-round pick who was making no money at quarterback, who was playing like Baker Mayfield, was being paid peanuts. That time is over if you were San Francisco. And now you got to make some difficult decisions. So we see the Geno Smith contract, 2 years, $75 million. It can be up to $85.5 million. I'm sure there's incentives based on wins, making the playoffs, MVPs, all pros, all that kind of stuff. So I doubt he's going to hit every single incentive, but you put it in there. And it's $66.5 million guaranteed. Quite simple. They are paying $30-something million a year for their quarterback. That's how much I think Geno is worth. That's what the market says that Geno is worth. I get why the Raiders are doing this. I say all the time, there's two steps you got to take in the National Football League. You got to take a step from being bad to good, and then can you take the step from good to great? The Raiders have been bad for quite some time. They're bad. They're one of the worst teams in the National Football League. They are trying to take the step to good. kind of like what the Broncos did. The Broncos have been bad. They got good. Now the question is, can you take that step from being a good team to a team that can compete in their division and a team that could potentially make some noise in the postseason? Let's see if the Raiders can do that. If I'm the Raiders, I don't let this Geno Smith deal stop me from still trying to find my quarterback. You giving this two-year deal and the amount of money tells you that there is a very noticeable expiration date on Geno Smith. Well, I know it and you know it. So maybe you put it off for this upcoming season and you don't draft a quarterback for 2025. You need to have an 18-month plan, though, to go find your quarterback, and you need to move on from Geno Smith at some point. Because if you look at the teams that are winning in the AFC, they all got quarterbacks under 30. That ain't what Geno Smith is anymore. It's the Mahomes. It's the Allens. It's the Burrows. It's the C.J. Strouds. It's those guys. You got somebody that doesn't fit. Some of the references and slang, he's not a part of that era. So you need to try to find a quarterback that is a part of that era, and let's see if the Raiders can ultimately end up doing that. The Chiefs have had a very familiar offseason. That's the word I'll use for right now. It has been very, very familiar. They have brought back Mike Edwards. This has been really a theme of this offseason, that the Chiefs are bringing back a lot of familiar pieces. They brought back Juju. They brought back Hollywood Brown. You look at the defense. They brought back Mike Pinnell. They brought back Charles Amenihu. Mike Edwards is coming back. JT, I think the Chiefs have sent a very, very clear message to everybody. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. The Chiefs have not, they did not have the mindset of tearing it down and trying to build it back together. Their mindset was, hey, we don't care what happened in the Super Bowl. We are still one of the three best teams in the National Football League. We won the AFC again. We're the favorites in our division again. We're the favorites in our conference again. We won 17 games last season again. We're not starting over. No, we're going to bring back 90% of that roster. We're getting back Rashee Rice at some point for this upcoming season. Let's see how they hit in the NFL draft. We're going to solidify our left tackle position, and then we'll go from there. But the message that the Chiefs have sent, I think, is a very clear one. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. They have not tried to really fix anything this offseason other than their left tackle. Everything else has been business as usual for the Kansas City Chiefs.
And I like that approach because as fans and as, I would say, spectators, we were overthinking everything. The Chiefs were like, listen, we know what's the worst part, our offensive tackle. Let's go out and get a left tackle. They went out there and they did that. Then they're like, okay, listen, we got to the Super Bowl with this squad. Let's bring majority of them back. We know what we can do with them. And they are familiar with the scheme on both sides. I think what the Chiefs are doing might sound boring and feel boring, but I think it's also the right move because the Chiefs have used this same squad and they've got to the Super Bowl three straight years.
This would be my question to the Chiefs, and I hope that we get an opportunity to ask this at some point to someone in position of power with the Chiefs. Where are they expecting improvements other than at left tackle? You would have to assume, based on their moves, you don't go pay Jalen Moore if you're not expecting to be better at left tackle in 2025 than you were in 2024. It's just not how this works. So they are expecting improvement at left tackle. Where else are you expecting to see improvements? Is it now, well, we didn't have Charles Amenihu for a time because of the ACL. We think our pass rush will be better from day one because he's back. All right, you could sell me on that. Well, we think our cornerback room is going to be more well-rounded and more complete. We brought in Christian Fulton for this upcoming year. We still got Jalen Watson. We think 1, 2, 3. But they brought back so many of the same pieces from a year ago. Where are you expecting guys to be better? Are you expecting a lot of improvement on this upcoming team?
I would say I could see improvement on the wide receiver front just because of how there was injuries and there was a lot of things moving parts with the wide receivers and then Xavier Worthy being a rookie. So I think if you ask that question to someone, I think they would say wide receiver is where they think the biggest improvement could be.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think in that conversation, though, you are expecting Hollywood Brown to be healthy this upcoming season. Let's see how that goes. Knock on wood. We don't have the answer to that. You're expecting Rashee Rice to come back healthy, kind of, and I would say out of those two things, at least where I would maybe caution a little bit on Xavier Worthy for next year is, all right, well, if you're expecting Hollywood to be a centerpiece of what you have offensively, and you also got to factor in Rice is going to get his targets, how much more room for growth next season do you think you're going to have with Xavier Worthy? I mean, Xavier Worthy, now, he's a second-year player, so obviously there is room for improvement and where he can grow, no question about it. But if you're looking at the Chiefs last year and sort of where he was, and now you're kind of fast forwarding, you know, who you think is going to get targets, who you think is going to be used in your offense, is there enough usage there? I mean, Xavier Worthy got 98 targets this past season. Are you expecting Xavier Worthy to get a whole lot more than that for next year? I mean, he had 98 targets. Let's say he gets to 105, 110. I mean, all right, that's a little bit better than where you were at. But, I mean, on those 98 targets, he got less than 700 yards this year. Now, I think the biggest thing for them is just going to be efficiency. You threw it to him 98 times and got less than 700 yards. Maybe he gets 90 targets, but on those 90 targets, you now get 70 catches, and you turn those 70 catches into 850 yards. You got Hollywood Brown. You bring back Rashee Rice. I think more so than anything with Xavier Worthy, it's doing more with less. Because last season, you spent a lot of volume trying to get him the ball. And until the final, I would say, 6 to 8 weeks of the season, you were sort of unable to figure out how to get him fully involved in the offense. Coming up at the top of the hour, let's talk some Royals baseball. Jacob Milham from Kings of Kauffman will be on the show as we are 1 week out in Royals baseball. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.